This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. This week, we've been revisiting some of our favorite interviews of 2012. And we conclude the week by presenting two more, Terry's visits with Stephen Colbert and Doris Day. We'll start with Colbert in an interview which focused exclusively on his musical interests and influences. His Comedy Central show, The Colbert Report, is largely political satire. But Colbert loves music and loves to sing, so he often has on guest performers and sometimes sings with them. Last year, Colbert performed in the New York Philharmonic's production of Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. Terry interviewed Colbert in the fall after the publication of his latest book, America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't.
So I've made it clear to you several times on Fresh Air when you've been a guest in the past that I love it when you sing. I love it when you sing on stage. I love it when you sing on your show. I love it when you sing with guests on your show. So someday I hope maybe you'll sing on our show. But in the meantime...
That'd be fun.
In the meantime, we asked you to bring some of your favorite recordings so we could talk about music. And so you sent us the names of a few recordings. We have them ready to play. So I thought we'd start with the first one, which is a song from Jesus Christ Superstar, which I assume you first heard when you were very young.
So, yeah, I think it was probably 7 or 8 when I first heard it.
And was
the Broadway, the Broadway cast recording.
The Broadway cast recording. Okay. And how did you hear it?
One of my brothers and sisters had it, maybe my sister Lulu or something like that. And just for the record, Terry.
Yes.
The three songs that I picked for today, they're not necessarily my favorite recordings. I just thought what are just three songs that mean something to me and are, almost specifically aren't my favorite recordings. I just thought of three different aspects of my life, and I thought, okay, are there any songs that just speak to that? And the first one would be Herod's song, King Herod's song from Jesus Christ Superstar. And I just remember hearing it as a kid, and it's an upbeat contemporary song in an otherwise very, very serious, musical. And it's the only song that's sort of comedic in Jesus Christ Superstar. And as a child, I remember thinking it was scandalous because the lyrics go, Herod is facing Jesus and he says, "Oh, so you are the Christ, y'all, the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool. If you do that for me, then I'll let you go free. Come on, King of the Jews." And I thought as a kid, oh, that's so blasphemous. That's so scandalous. And yet I loved the song because I was from a fairly devout family. But even as a young kid, my mom said, no, that's fine. That's exactly how they would have spoken to him.
Far worse.
That's just a you know what I mean? But that's like a theatrical expression of mm-hmm. contempt. And that opened my eyes as a kid that you could actually be – you could be wrong in character. You could be blasphemous in character and it doesn't negate how you feel about the subject. The greatest example is just because I play a murderer doesn't mean I'm a murderer. In the same way, you could actually mock Christ in this song, effectively mock Christ, and comedically mock Christ, and yet it's not a mockery of the story.
Well, that's kind of like you were 7 and figured out what it means to be in character, which you now are so much of the time on your show. It's like this is the roots. This is the roots of your character.
Well, certainly it's the first time I thought, oh, you can make jokes about religion that aren't anti-religious.
Right. Great. Okay. So let's hear the version from the original cast recording, 1970, Jesus Christ Superstar, and here it is.
Jesus, I am overjoyed to meet you face to face. You've been getting quite a name all around the place. Healing cripples, raising from the dead. And now I understand you're God. At least that's what you've said. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine, that's all you need to, and I'll know it's all true. Come on, King of the Jews.
Jesus, you just won't believe the hit you've made round here. You are all we talk about, the wonder of the year. Oh, what a pity if it's all a lie. Still, I'm sure that you can rock the cynics if you try. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ.
So that's King Herod's song from the original Broadway cast recording of Jesus Christ Superstar, one of the recordings that Stephen Colbert brought with him when we asked him to bring some recordings that have meant something to him over the years. And we did this because
I could do that whole musical, by the way.
You really?
Just start the,
were you,
you
ever
start,
in it? It's one of those musicals,
no,
everybody,
no.
You know, like Hair, like no. Everybody was in Hair.
No, no, no. I'm not really a musical guy, but I if you just started like the opening, down, da, da, down, da, da, down, da, down, like the opening of Jesus Christ Superstar, I could probably sing every note and every word from the beginning to end.
Okay.
I love that musical. So, I don't even know if it's good. You know what I mean? At this point, I have no idea whether it's even a good musical. It's just too much like in my DNA.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to another recording that you named as one that's been important to you. And this is Elvis Costello, who, unlike King Herod, has actually been on your show several times,
right.
including on your great holiday special a few years ago.
Right.
And tell us what this recording is and why you chose it.
This is a recording. This is a demo that Elvis Costello did in a hotel room. It wasn't released on an album originally. I think it was – I've loved the song for about 20 years. It was released as an album extra off of My Aim Is True, a reissue in the early 90s. And it's called Jump Up. And what I like about it is – one of the nice things about having a show is I've gotten to meet a few of the people, artists that I really love, and Elvis and I have become somewhat friends, which I just can't believe that occasionally there'll be a voicemail on my phone from Elvis Costello telling me he just ran into Bill O'Reilly in Reykjavik. You know, that's a completely surreal message to get on your cell phone to a kid who was rocking out to, you know, Armed Forces. But I love the song because it's sort of a satirical song. It's got a parodic nature to it, or not a parodic nature. It's really got sort of a political satirical song, and I've never discussed this song with Elvis, so I might get a message from Elvis Costello after this interview with you saying, "You know nothing of my work. What are you talking about?" But I've always thought of it as it's sort of like it's a person who is talking about insignificance in the face of power or of something that they want. And also talking about the hypocrisy of politicians. There's the second verse goes, candidates talking on the radio from the cheaters' jamboree. He must be their latest fool because it's a two-horse race and he changes bets like it was just another brand of cigarettes. Some people judge, then they just guess the rest. They can't understand it, don't mean that you're blessed. They got to catch the express, next stop nowhere, that way you can't forget. Jump up, hold on tight, can't trust a promise or a guarantee, because the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me. And I've always loved that line, you know, it's a two-horse race and he changes bets like it was another brand of cigarettes. And back long before I did political satire, I thought, yeah, isn't that interesting? There are only two choices and people flip back and forth as if it doesn't matter when there should be bold lines between these two people. And it's just got one of my favorite lines of any song in it. What the poetry in this line about it's a young man. He says, I'm not sure who the character is, but the young man says, I was a statue standing on a corner. Tell me, how else can a boy get to see those pretty pleats? And that seems like a young man who has no personal power. He's a statue standing on a corner. No one's noticing him, but he's looking at the girls going by. And he's trying to figure out how am I someone significant enough to be noticed? How else can a boy get to see those pretty pleats, which clearly means their skirt? But also it's got the word pretty please in it. And so by describing what he wants, he's also describing how he feels about what he wants. You know, let me see your skirt, pretty please. And those kind of lyrics are all through Elvis Costello's work. And I'm sort of in awe of his ability to often write in character, like as you know, Spike the Entertainer. Mm-hmm. He sort of writes in that character. He's wry. He's sort of sardonic. And I'm not a musician, but his music speaks to me and is if there were somebody's songs I wished I had written, it would be Elvis Costello's songs. And this is a song, one of the first songs I can remember thinking, God, I wish I had written that.
Okay, so let's hear it. This is Elvis Costello, Jump Up. It's a demo recorded in a hotel room or a bedroom or something in the mid-70s. Very lo-fi Elvis Costello, a great recording.
Everybody's talking like they can't sit down and looking like they can't stand up. It must be the latest style, and they've seen a lot of things that you never see. Back on the mile up to the hanging tree. Some people can't keep their fingers clean, just clicking their heels to the beat of the scene. Trying to keep careen until the first edition of last night's obituaries. Jump up, hold on tight. Can't trust a promise or a guarantee, 'cause the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me. No tombstone would ever surprise me when I'm locked in a room about half the size of a matchbox. Got holes in my socks, they match the ones that I got in my feet. I put my feet in the holes in the street and somebody paved me over. I was a statue standing on the corner. Tell me, how else can a boy get to see those pretty pleats? Candidate talking on the radio from the Cheetah's Jamboree. It must be their latest fool, 'cause it's a two-horse race and he changes bets like it was just another brand of cigarettes. Some people judge, then they just guess the rest. They can't understand, it don't mean that you're blessed. They ought to catch the express, next stop nowhere, that way you can't forget. Jump up, hold on tight. Can't trust a promise or a guarantee, 'cause the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me.
So that was an Elvis Costello recording from the mid-70s, which was chosen for us by my guest, Stephen Colbert. We asked him to bring some of his – some recordings that mean a lot to him. Because I love his music so much, because I love Stephen Colbert singing so much, we wanted to go musical today on the show. And the occasion for this interview is Stephen Colbert's new book, America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't. Something else you want to say about Elvis Costello?
Oh, well, yes. I had a conversation with Elvis maybe about 6 months ago, which, again, is a very weird thing, sentence for me to say. But I had a conversation with Elvis about 6 months ago. We were talking about the song Radio Radio. And I don't – you know, this is Elvis's story, so I hope he doesn't feel like I'm stealing something from him. But he said that the song Radio Radio was originally sort of anthemic. It wasn't sort of a biting kind of aggressive song. It was about how great radio feels. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And he said, yeah, people don't ask him much about it, but that he was trying when he was younger to try to write Bruce Springsteen songs. And that he really liked Bruce Springsteen's sound. And he said, but then he eventually stopped doing that because he would try to write these songs and like Bruce Springsteen, and it would end up writing things that were a little bit wry, sardonic, or sort of even sort of character-based. And they didn't have that sort of sincere anthemic quality that Bruce Springsteen song sometimes has. And that kind of blew me away, because he is describing his relationship to Bruce Springsteen kind of like my relationship to Jon Stewart. And John's favorite artist is Bruce Springsteen, and probably my favorite rock artist is Elvis Costello. So there's an odd parallel between Elvis's evolution from what he was trying to do like Bruce and my evolution from what I was trying to do when I worked with John.
That's actually really interesting. So I want to...
God, I hope so. Because I just stole Elvis Costello's story. And if I didn't make it interesting, God, I'm in trouble. All right.
Okay, so let's go to another recording. And this is a Ben Folds 5 recording. And perhaps not coincidentally, he was just on your show.
Yeah, it was on my show two nights ago. And I really like Ben Folds. And every night, actually, at my show, just for fun, at one of the commercial breaks, we usually play his song, Stephen's Last Night in Town. And we'll sometimes play. I love the song Philosophy by Ben Folds, and I like a lot of his stuff. But there's one particular song that I just love called The Best Imitation of Myself. And there's sort of an obvious resonance for me because I do an imitation of myself professionally. And the lyrics go, you know, I feel like a quote out of context, withholding the rest, so I can be for you who you want to see. I got the gesture and sound, got the timing down. It's uncanny. Yeah, you'd think it was me. Do you think I should take a class to lose my southern accent? Did I make me up or make the face till it stuck? I do the best imitation of myself. And when I first heard the song, it was just a few years ago, actually. Somehow the song had escaped my notice. I just thought he'd written it for me. But then when I listened to it more, I thought it's just a beautiful expression of how we are toward each other as people. We don't think that we are sufficient for each other, that no one wants to know the real me or the whole me. I just want to give you the part of me that I think you expect to see from me. And almost as if that little part of me is more than the whole of me, because I don't want to give you any of the poison. I only want to give you the meat of me. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And this constant slight changing of our mask, or as Eliot says in Proof Rock, time to prepare a face for the faces that we meet, I just hadn't heard in a song in the same way as this one. And I couldn't love this song more.
Were you already doing the Colbert Report when you heard this?
Yeah, I'd already done the show for a few years when I heard this song. And I mean, even it says, like, you know, if it's all the same, I've people to entertain. You know, I'll juggle one-handed, do some magic tricks, and the best imitation of myself. And
you could probably do that. I know you could stand on your head.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, it's a great song for an entertainer to listen to. But what's beautiful about the song to me is that we all play the entertainer for each other.
Yeah.
Just some of us do it professionally.
And some better than others. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is the Ben Folds 5, Best Imitation of Myself, one of the songs chosen by my guest, Stephen Colbert.
I feel like a quote out of context, withholding the rest, so I can be free what you want to see. I got the gesture and sounds, got the timing down. It's uncanny, yeah, you think it was me.
That's Ben Folds 5, Best Imitation of Myself, and it's one of the songs Stephen Colbert brought with him today because we asked him to bring a few songs that really mean something to him, and we did that because I really love Stephen Colbert singing so much. So what's some of the music you grew up with in the house that your parents or older siblings were playing?
Well, I'm the youngest of 11 kids, so a lot of the music I listened to was like hand-me-down albums from them. So as a kid, I listened to a lot of James Taylor and Gordon Lightfoot and Deep Purple. I mean, it was pretty eclectic. It's whatever the older ones left behind. Nancy Sinatra, Paul Anka, Elvis Presley, mm-hmm. You know, Creedence Clearwater. It's because my eldest brothers and sisters, my brother Ed bought an original 45 of Bill Haley and the Comets, Rock Around the Clock. But my closest brothers and sisters, you know, left behind Cat Stevens' Tea for the Tillerman. So I listened to all that because those albums were just laying around. So basically from the beginning of rock and roll through the, you know, mid-70s soft rock, folk, post-folk, feel-good festival, I listened to all of it. I didn't really have a singular music that I listened to. I can't say that I was like, I was a Who guy, or I was, I mean, the Beatles were gigantic. They eclipse everything on the musical landscape. It's hard to imagine a band more important than them to me. I don't know musically, but that argument can be made, obviously. But the Beatles were the biggest and most important, but I wasn't sort of slavishly devoted like some people. Their identity was associated with a single group.
Stephen Colbert speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. His latest book is America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't. We'll continue their conversation in the second half of the show. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.
Celebrating Fresh Air's 25 years, the Neubauer Foundation salutes WHYY and listeners like you, committed to new ideas and civilized conversation. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Republic Records, with selections from the Les Miserables soundtrack, including I Dreamed a Dream and Suddenly, available now. From Ally Bank, who believes in getting more from your news and your money, offering money market accounts. Learn more at allybank.com. And from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
You'd be so easy to love.
Coming up, Doris Day. She turned 88 this year. She'll tell Terry about how she started singing and making movies and why she left Hollywood. And more with Stephen Colbert.
The yearning for so swell to keep every home fire burning for we. So grand at the game, so carefree together, that it does seem a shame that you can't see your future with me, 'cause you'd be out so
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. This week, we've been revisiting some of our favorite interviews of 2012. And one of them is Terry's interview with Stephen Colbert, when she talked to him about his musical background, influences, and passions. Let's get back to that conversation.
So when you were very young, did your parents play music in the house?
No, not really. We sang. We were all encouraged to sing at all times.
What, around the piano or guitar?
No, just around the house.
So when you sang around the house, did you sing harmony, and what songs did you sing?
No, we didn't sing harmony. Like we have a few family songs. Like, you know, at a drop of a hat, anyone in our family will sing, I am my Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha, my destiny calls and I go. Or we'll sing, you know, we'll sing Men of Arlek from the movie Zulu, which is kind of our family movie. We'll sing, you know, this is what they're singing when the Zulus basically breach the line and kill everybody, and Michael Caine, you know, dies in his movie debut. You know, what's it called? Like, Men of Arlek, stop your dreaming. Can't you hear those? Men of Arlek, stop your dreaming. Can't you see their spear points gleaming? See the warrior banners streaming through this battlefield. At weddings, at family weddings, the men will get on one side of the room and we'll sing Men of Arlek. And the women will be across the room and do the Zulu chant and they'll attack us. And then we'll meet in the middle of the room and hug. It's really lovely.
That's so funny.
True story. True story.
No, were you ever in summer camp or anything like that where you had—
No. I mean, I had 11 kids. It was always camp.
Were you ever in a band?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was in two bands. I was in a band in elementary school. I was in a band called Nebula 5. And there were only three of us.
Cosmic.
In Nebula 5. And because Nebula was a cool word and a cool thing. And 5, we kind of picked 5 because we thought 5 was the best number. We never occurred to us that the Jackson 5 were because there were 5 of them. And, you know, as an elementary school kid, you're always like, what's the best color? It's blue. Wrong, it's red. It's blue, stupid. Or like, what's the best number? It's 3. It's 5. 5 is definitely the best number. And so we thought 5 was the best number. So we were Nebula 5. It was me, Tommy Whittle, who at the time in third grade called himself Tommy London. That was his stage name. And Gray Motzinger on drums. And I sang. And then in high school, I was in a band briefly called A Shot in the Dark. And we did mostly like Rolling Stones covers. And we would like play at a party for free beer or something like that.
So did you do Mick Jagger parts?
Yeah. Like Honky Tonk Woman and stuff like that. Brown Sugar. All that kind of stuff. I'd strut around on stage.
Would you really?
In a jersey. Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, you got to move, baby. You got to move. You got to give the ladies what they want.
Did you sing in church?
No. Uh-uh. I was never in a choir. I was in my school choir. Uh-huh. I was a bass in the school choir. And, you know, we did a lot of religious music in my church. It was a religiously affiliated school. And so we did things like we would do like Mozart's Mass kind of religious music. And I still remember the bass line to things like the national anthem. You know, in my mind, I almost can't sing the national anthem, the melody anymore. I have to sing, you know, oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Whose bright stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the raw. You know, I can't remember the melody anymore.
You have quite a range, though, because I wouldn't imagine you being able to get that low, because I know you have a nice high
range. I'm actually
range.
Much more comfortable really low.
Seriously?
I'm much more comfortable singing, you know, oh, Jesus Christ Superstar, the Caiaphas, great bass role, is, no, wait, we need a more permanent solution to our problem. What then to do about Jesus of Nazareth, miracle, wonder man, hero of fools? That's the part for me is Caiaphas.
Well, now you just need to be in a production. So one more music question. If you could perform in any kind of music venue, would it be a Broadway show? Would it be a rock band? Would it be a country band? Would it be an opera with Audra McDonald? What would it be?
Probably a show. You know, because I'm an actor and I like a story. So a show. I mean, King Herod. Man, playing King Herod. One song. It's in my range. Call me.
Okay. Well, Stephen Colbert, thank you for bringing music with you. Thank you for singing for us. It was just such a treat. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks, Terry.
Stephen Colbert speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. His latest book is called America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't. Coming up, another of our favorite interviews from 2012 with Doris Day. This is Fresh Air.